Three, two, one.
Some people say a man made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bone. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What are you doing? Another day, old man, deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
The Red Stick Ramblers, 16 Tons. That's a tune made popular by Tennessee Ernie Ford. It's a song about a person getting into the roller coaster of being in a job that's not satisfying and just existing. Our special guest today is going to talk about our jobs and how we can live exactly the job we want. Jeffrey Garten is with us. He's the author of Career Contentment, Don't Settle for Anything Else. He's got a 5-star rating from Amazon's ranking system, and we'll be hearing more about that in just a few minutes. You're listening to BBS Radio. This is Sherry Edwards, your host for this hour. The show is Sound Health Radio, and we're running into our second a year doing this show, and we love it, and we're happy that you could join us. As most of you know, we here at the Sound Health Institute investigate the idea of using the voice as a holographic representation of the human body. And then we provide you back with low-frequency sound that entrains your brain to do what it should have done in the first place to run your body efficiently. Just this week, we did 2 projects on rheumatoid arthritis. It was such an incredible rush to watch people who came in with their hands all gnarled so they couldn't even shake hands with you, and they were distorted, and we took their vocal prints and we found out what was going on. It was 2 sisters, and they had genetic rheumatoid arthritis, and in just a few minutes they were out of pain and they could move. They had more mobility. That sounds very hard to believe, but it happened. I'm going to tell you just a little bit more about how you can get involved with that in a minute. But with these 2 sisters, I love to see their lights, their eyes just light up with awe. And this is something that the entire world should know about, what we're doing here. So we're going to do something about that. We're going to give you, our listening audience, a free, absolutely free, we're not even going to ask for your email address, version of this program that we're using. And we're going to call it Nano Voice, because it is a little version of something that we're doing in a big way. This free download is just a software program. You'll need a microphone. You can get that at Walmart. There's instructions with the download. But this is a program, it's a micro version of our big personality profiler invoice, and it uses math-based biomarkers within the frequencies of your voice to allow you a peek into your secret self, even in looking for a job. What job would really fit you the best? It can help you understand and solve issues from an unconscious level of awareness. Second announcement here. Thank you for all your emails and phone calls. We love hearing from all of you and answering your questions. One of the questions that was sent as recently is, what happens to my questions when you don't get them on the air? Well, we send them to the guest in question in the hopes that they'll get back to you, and we also save the questions for the next time we have a similar guest. And if that guest doesn't get back to you or we don't get back to you, you write to us and we'll see what we can do about it. Last announcement, the Chicago Expo. We're going to be there in Chicago at the Schaumburg Hotel and Convention Center, June 27th to the 29th. And I'll be speaking on the topic, Is Frequency a New Drug or an Ancient Mystery Revealed? I'm going to tell you a little bit about how we do all the stuff we do. There's more information. You can just go to, I think it's just healthfreedomexpo.com, and there's a schedule there, and lots and lots of lectures. And we're going to be giving away there these nano voice programs. You can walk right up to us and bring your computer. We'll download it for you, no questions asked, so that you can be doing this kind of thing on your own. So we hope to see you there at that expo. This is a not-for-profit voice group. I should say not-for-profit group. And they lobby for your health rights. I was looking at something that just came in that said voice on it, and I'm trying to talk and read at the same time. If you want to immediately get your copy of NanoVoice, and it's a full computer program and gives you a printout, you can go to our BBS info board. Just go to BBS and look up when we're on, and it's Sunday at 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern, and you'll see the link there, and it'll just, you click the link and it'll help download it right on your site. If you want it, us to send it to you, just write to Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-Y, at sherryedwards.com, or just call us, 740-698-9119. Okay, on with the show then. How many of you really love your job? I am very lucky that I'm doing what I love, but even though I love my job, there's still things when I have to do something. Things I don't really like. So our special guest is Jeffrey Garten. He's the author of Career Contentment, Don't Settle for Anything Else. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Sherry. I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Why did you write this job, this book? Did you have a horrible job or something, or just feel sorry for the rest of us?
Well, my career was in human resources. 21 years with the Philip Morris Company, and I started my career in 1978, and since then, you know, I've noticed that every year, and despite our best efforts, we were never able to completely satisfy employees. You know, giving them this, giving them that, they still complained and wanted more, and yet they were able to have wonderful careers. And so when I got out of the corporate world, and after 9/11 happened, I was career coaching a number of people who had survived 9/11, and they said, you know, what would enable my contentment to stay in a job with or without job satisfaction? And that question resonated with me. I didn't understand it because, you know, my training had been to make people satisfied. If that didn't work, they would have complained. And these people were acknowledging that complete satisfaction was never possible, and it's offered by every employer, and they were looking for something deeper. And so when I started my career, it was with the objective of trying to find an answer. How do we connect with our calling? And how do we have and enjoy our best career despite these instances of job dissatisfaction? And so I think I found it when I talked to these people, and it was the idea of career contentment.
How many people do you think would come to work if you said to them, we want to hire you here, but showing up for the job is not part of, it's not required, and you can get your paycheck regardless if you show up or not? How many people do you think would show up?
Oh, if they don't have to show up and take a paycheck, I think everybody would.
So if you're content with your job, though, you should want to go to work if it gives you that feeling of contentment.
Sure, sure. Now, there's a difference. Here's what my research discovered, Sherry, which is something people don't normally think of. Satisfaction, the word satisfy, originates from the French and Latin word sad and factitious, or artificial. In order for you to be made satisfied, someone has to do something to fulfill your expectations first. You can't simply choose set aside. That's the sad part. And because you lack control over the people and things that make you set aside, the probability exists that you may never be completely satisfied. And it's factitious or artificial because it doesn't originate from within, but it's dependent and conditional on people and things outside of you. So satisfaction is an outside-in proposition, whereas contentment, that originates from the French and Latin words content, meaning contained, or from within. The contented person, even if not entirely satisfied, persists and endures with a calmness protected by their own self-sufficiency. It's like your mom told you when you were a little kid, stop whining and complaining, be happy with what you have, and use it to turn your situation around. So the idea of contentment doesn't mean settling for less, but more so enables our resilience to persist and endure when we can't have all the things that we want. So extrapolating on that, or building on that, contentment is what we feel, that flow and joy and sense of accomplishment that we get from working. That's not job satisfaction, which is a condition created by employers. That those feelings are genuine contentment. So when we talk about career contentment, we're talking about doing what we love and loving what we do. So yeah, if we're in a job that we love, that's when we tend to lose track of time. We would almost do it for free.
Like volunteers.
Well, to some extent, yes. People volunteer to fulfill a purpose that's unique and important to them, and they'll do it without pay. And you know, when I wrote my book, there was a two-year period I worked without an income because I was doing research and writing, and I didn't have time to do a job. Now, I'd saved up enough to do that, but it put a stress on the family that was pretty challenging. But I loved it, and I would do it again, just because I was doing what I loved. I had contentment, even though I was not entirely satisfied, you know, with the restrictions I had placed on myself.
Not a lot of people have that kind of savings to be able to do that. But we have a very awesome situation that happened here. A few years back, we were embezzled. And embezzled a really, really large sum that put us in a total, total hole. And we had employees work for us for nearly 3 months with no expectation of ever getting paid. And they did it. They went out and got other jobs so they could still work here. It was total awesome, total contentment that they were doing something wonderful for the world, which is like your book, because it really is very helpful to not just you to write it and get it out of you to other people, but you're doing something. I think you did it for more reasons than just your contentment. You did it because you wanted that for other people. Well,
that's right.
Can you define?
Define career contentment?
Well, you already did. I guess I want to ask, who gets to define it? Because we had a guy here we fired because he wanted to bring his TV in and watch while he was doing his job. He was very content to do that, but we weren't.
Yeah. No, their employers control jobs and the means to satisfy. And you have to set certain conditions that an employee can either accept or reject. Contentment is something that the employee controls by the control of their thoughts and emotions, their choice of work, and their reasoning, and their self-reliance. So employers control jobs and the means to satisfy. We control our state of mind and contentment, which we rely on to manage our career with or without job satisfaction. So contentment explains why you won't accept just any job, no matter how satisfying, why you may stay in a job, like in your situation, despite dissatisfying conditions, or why you may leave the job despite the best efforts by your employers to keep you satisfied. Contentment is like an internal homing device. The closer you get to something that you think you're supposed to be doing, the better you feel. But the further away you get from what you're supposed to be doing, you don't feel too good. So I tell people that contentment is the intentions of your spirit or your authentic self, why you're doing what you're doing versus doing anything else.
What do you think the percent is of people who are content with their jobs?
Well, last year, in 2007, the Conference Board reported that 65% of U.S. workers are dissatisfied with their job. And I think Career Builder reported that that figure was somewhere up around 84%. And after that data came out, people were astonished that the figure wasn't higher. And then 2 months after that, in I believe June or July, the Society for Human Resources Management came out and said that 80% of workers are satisfied with their jobs. And then another month after that, the University of Chicago, the opinion, National Opinion Research Center, said 85% of workers are satisfied, and the data are unchanged since 1972. So, you know, it was a big conflict that created confusion. Are people satisfied or not? And to resolve it, they said, well, they're satisfied with their work, but dissatisfied with their conditions. And it still was confusing. And I think what we can surmise from this, Sherry, is that probably a large percent of us, closer to 80%, are satisfied or content, rather, with our choice of work, but we are not entirely satisfied. Perhaps 65% are dissatisfied with our work conditions, our jobs, our responsibilities, or our boss, or our pay, our benefits, our commute, the things we can't control. But what we do control is our choice of work and our state of mind in regard to those things. So the short answer is we really don't know, but I think we can surmise that if somebody is dissatisfied, they'll probably quit and take a job similar to what they had. So they were content with their work, but dissatisfied with the conditions.
For those of you who want to ask Jeff a question, you can reach us toll-free at 877-876-5227 in the U.S. and then in Canada, 888-815-9756. There is a direct number, 530-876-3222. If you can't remember all those, just go to bbsradio.com. This is Station 1, and the numbers are posted there. You can also write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com, and Jeff can answer your questions. Jeff, why? Since we don't know, so let's guess that even some people are satisfied with their jobs, but why do people stay in a job where they're not happy?
Well, that's an unfortunate thing. If they stay in a job where they're not content, they probably lack some understanding of their spirit's intentions or their authentic self, or they're in a desperate situation and they're just afraid to make a move. And I think the more we can reach a state of contentment, that is, content with our abilities, content with our interests, then that gives us the courage to get up and go. So if a person is unhappy, the worst thing they can do is sit there and complain because nothing's going to happen except you're jeopardizing your job. If you're truly not content with your work, that is, you're not utilizing your motivated talents, you think you're wasting your time and you're dragging yourself out of bed trying to get to work and you're watching the clock, that's an unhealthy situation you probably should give some serious thought to getting out of. You know, and now I also get the question, Sherry, what about the people who have to get laid off and in order to put food on the table? How do they find contentment in a job that's really not in their career path? And I advise those people that there is virtue, not from a morality standpoint, but there's virtue in applying yourself with a clean conscience to doing your best job. Contentment is about loving what is as you move towards what you desire. So I coached a fellow who was laid off from an IT manager job, and he had to take a job at Sears working by the counter. And that put him in a situation of having to wait on maybe 25 people he previously serviced or supervised. And it was humiliating. And I helped him to understand that his noble purpose for working was to feed his family and put food on the table. Throw yourself heart and soul into doing your best job with that as your purpose, and continue looking for work. He had been in that situation for about 10 months and was miserable, but he couldn't get a job because every time he interviewed, the interviewers were able to pick up on his state of miserableness, and they thought it would be a risk hiring him. But when we got him to understand the virtue of working, loving what is as you work towards what you want. He put his heart and soul into his work, and he started loving it. And then when he continued interviewing, it made him very attractive. And it had the effect of shortening his unemployment period.
You know, we come from a really small town here, and the nearest town's about 80 miles away. And I have friends that absolutely loved their jobs, but with this gas crunch, they quit their jobs in the big city and came back, and now they're miserable, but they seem they don't have a choice.
Yes, well, you raise a good point. See, they're distanced or separated from their spirit's intentions or that authentic self, the job that they love. Now, you know, the gas prices aren't going to stay miserable all the time. But I think if they can connect with what their purpose is, why did they do this? There's got to be a reason beyond just saving money on gas. You know, it's their purpose is to put food on the table and feed their family. Any job they can find to fulfill that purpose, that they can put their heart and soul into it, is going to make them better off in the long run. It'll enable their resilience to endure until they can turn their situation around. If they recognize the situation they're in is not entirely good for them, if they allow themselves to complain or whine about that situation, it's going to further erode their state of mind and emotions, making them unattractive. And so it's a decision that they've made. And so, you know, they could have continued driving and tried to make it at work or get another apartment or maybe move the family, and they chose not to do that. So whatever work that they can find, put your heart and soul into it. And like this fellow at Sears that I coached, he ultimately almost decided not to leave Sears, even though it was like 20% less than what he was earning previously.
You know, I think it's time for employers to think about some changes too, maybe having their people work 4/10s or work from home.
Yeah.
So there's some responsibility to us as a nation to just try to cope with this gas crunch, because it's getting to everybody.
It's a real problem. It's a real problem. And prolonged unemployment is a real problem. And what I recommend to employers is, you know, if they want to attract a high-talent workforce and keep them engaged in what they're doing, they do have to make these kind of accommodations, what I call demonstrating their contentment worthiness. And there are things they can do, like the 4/10, that help people say, well, you know, I'm spending more in gas, but by gosh, I really love what I do. I'm going to stick it out, just like the people who had worked for you after this case of embezzlement. You know, there's just a matter of connecting with what we consider to be our highest, most noble purpose.
I'm, as an employer, I'm also finding, even in interviews, I'm getting a different kind of employee. And sometimes it's almost this entitlement. I'll take the job if I can have that, or if I can have this. Recently, I just fired some guy. He was a young guy. And we hired him for 4 hours a day to do that cleaning here, and I caught him up in his office in the floor sleeping. And I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I thought I was entitled to a lunch hour. I said, well, even if you are, you ought to clock out, and you ought to tell somebody you're up here sleeping. I mean, and he really argued with me vehemently that he was entitled to take this nap during work hours. I mean, I just find that nuts.
Well, you have to understand that you're talking about Generation X and the Millennials, who grew up watching their parents kill themselves for satisfactions they didn't always get due to layoffs and reorganizations and sending jobs overseas and upsetting families and creating problems. So these kids who come into the workplace now, They're not going to tolerate that stuff. It didn't work for their parents, and they didn't want to get into that kind of a situation. So yes, there is a sense of entitlement that's out there, and we can't just say, well, you got to do your time, you got to earn your stripes, you got to do this, you got to do that. I mean, they'll just go elsewhere because they're not going to kill themselves, as I said, for the same satisfactions they didn't see their parents get. They're looking for, I think, career contentment. Which is, I mean, But these kids are going to grow up and to be doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, and who knows what else, because it's within them to be those things. And eventually they'll come to terms with what they have to do in order to get what they want. But until they hit that point, we're going to take a stand.
Well,
for contentment, not job satisfaction.
This was his first week on the job, and I'm sure he was very content to sleep, but I was not content to allow him to sleep when he was supposed to be sweeping the building.
No, and I think it's imperative that employers set some standards, set some rules that people can understand. Maybe he didn't read the rules, or after he read the rules, he said, well, I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. In which case, there has to be some come to terms on what he can and cannot do. And if they're not going to work, then they're not the type of people who you want there. And he probably took a job that he shouldn't have taken in the first place.
You know, it never occurred to me to put in our rules of working here that you cannot take a nap on our time. It just, common sense would tell me that somebody who wanted a job would know that. We have an email come in from just signed Baker from New York. Is it healthy that you're thinking about your job all the time, even when you're not at work, like ways to solve problems, new projects, ideas? I'm in a very creative job that I love, media and advertising. Are these kinds of jobs different from the ordinary type?
I think that's a beautiful question. You know, that's full engagement. And if you're at home and these things are passing through your, these questions and so forth are passing through your mind, I think they're signals that are telling you you're probably appropriately fit, because you're feeling the joy of being engaged and occupied by what you're doing. And I think that's a healthy sign. Eventually, you'll have to set some limitations around, you know, I don't know if you have a family or whatever, but when you go on vacation, you need to, you know, nourish the soul and take time away from those things. And I think that's good as well. But I think you're getting an indication from your spirit that you're probably doing the right thing, and that's why you're so engaged in what you're doing. Wouldn't you love to have, Sherry, wouldn't you love to have this guy working for you with these kind of thoughts going through his head at home, trying to figure out how he can do a better job?
Absolutely. And then we have other people who don't want to take the job home with them. When you coach people, do you ask them those questions? You want a 9-to-5 job? You want a creative job? I mean, what are the kinds of things you do when you coach people?
Well, when I coach people, I ask them, what do you suppose that you're supposed to be doing? And why do you think that? And I also like to find out if they've got a network of friends that they derive strength from and nourishment from. Because when they get into these trying situations, they should have somebody that they can turn to sort of bounce their ideas off of, whether it's a mentor, whether it's a coach or something like that. So if they have that foundation of friendship or nourishing mentors available to them, they'll know whether they're in the right job or not. So our coaching typically goes to what they want to talk about. Sometimes it's just an issue of dealing with a difficult boss, or sometimes it's an issue of, you know, I can't seem to get engaged. I don't know if I'm in the right job or what. So these are the things that we discuss.
I think, too, that they need help in dealing with the kind of job. They want a service job. They want a job where they crunch numbers. So do you help them fill out or pull out those kinds of needs from inside them?
Yes. The answers are within them. And I'll give you an example. I was coaching a fellow that his name is Bill. He was a director of sales for a food company in Iowa. And he had been laid off, and he had been looking for about 3 months before he contacted me, wanted some help getting another job. And I looked at his resume. It was a fantastic resume, great experience, great personality. And I said to him, I said, Bill, why do you suppose it's taking so long? Because this is a small network of people. You know who we're hiring. And he says, I don't know what the problem is, but it's been difficult. I don't know what I'm doing that I should. I said, okay, well, I'll help you out. And are you sure this is what you should be looking for? He says, yes, I want another director of sales for a food company. I said, okay. So 2 months later, he's still looking. And by this time, Sherry, I asked this question, how to get them reinvigorated. And I say, what are you going to do to celebrate your new job? What would you like to do with your family to celebrate your new job? He says, immediately, I'm going to take you to Florida. We're going to go on a week-long cruise of the Eastern Caribbean. I said, wow, you've already got that figured out. Why that versus anything else? He says, because I've always wanted to work for a cruise company. I said, well, Bill, that's the problem. You're looking in the wrong area. You know, that's a calling. That's what you should be doing. He goes, well, there's no oceans in Iowa. And, I know my wife and family won't want to move. And I said, but Bill, you need to investigate this. He goes, Jeff, it's my career. Just help me get another director of sales job at a food company. So I said, okay, are you sure? He goes, yes, I'm sure. Well, about 3 weeks goes by, and he gets an interview, and finally he gets an offer. It's for another director of sales position. And so he takes his family down to Florida for this trip. He then, that's on a Saturday, he gets down to Miami, gets on the boat on a Saturday, he calls me Wednesday from St. Thomas, and he says, Jeff, how can I rescind my acceptance of this offer? And I said, oh my God, what's happening, Bill? He goes, the cruise line made me an offer. And he says, my family wants to move down here.
Gives me chills.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
It turns out that for as long as he was looking for that job, for that right job, they were looking for somebody just like him. And so what you have to do is suspend judgment. Let the process, trust the process to work naturally. And then the job finds you. Now, I know you're into harmonics. And when we can maintain harmony between our realistic thoughts, our optimistic feelings, and our good intentions to find the right job, without doubting or scheming or trying to make the right job fit, it just happens naturally. And that's exactly what happened to Bill. He was trying to force himself into a job that he shouldn't. And he knew he was getting a calling, and he just didn't stop and listen.
Trust the universe.
Yeah. The harmony between your thoughts. And I mean, things just happen. I used to work for a fellow by the name of Dan Masta. He was my first HR director. Loved the guy. And he said, you know, this HR job wouldn't be so bad if it weren't for the people.
Human relations job, but then like the people.
Yeah. And his point was, you know, we scheme and we plan and we worry. And in the long run, everything has a way of working itself out. And I think the sooner that we can get harmony ourselves with what we're looking for, what we want to do, the quicker we come to the realization that we're in the right job or we shouldn't be making a move.
So you not only help people prepare for the kinds of jobs and pull that information out, but do you really help them in a job placement? I mean, do you have a big list of, oh, I think that would work, go to this company?
Well, you know, somebody comes to me with a resume, I believe in their heart they're reaching out to what is right for them. And the way they've written it down is generally the best way that their resume should be written. So I don't try to put a lot of changes to what they've done. And but what I do is I give them advice and counsel. I pull from them what they think they should be doing. And then I give them advice and counsel as to how to find it. 75% of all jobs are landed through networking. And, you know, I'll give you another story. I worked with this one woman, and she was walking out of church one day, and she made eye contact with another woman on the other side of the church who went up to the door. Well, she thought, do I know that woman? Should I introduce myself? And she says, nah, I shouldn't do that. I don't want to be a burden. And with my job search, I don't want to be a burden to her. And then the other woman, it turns out she was thinking, do I know that lady? It seems I met her somewhere. I'm supposed to meet her. I wonder what that's about. They never talked. 2 months later, they ended up running into each other in the grocery store. And the woman looking for a job said, I think I know you. And I saw you at church, and I didn't want to impose, but I'm so-and-so. And he goes, oh, you know, yeah, I recall seeing you, and I thought I knew you too. She says, well, what do you do? She goes, well, I happen to be looking for a job. She goes, well, what do you do? She goes, well, I work in the IT area, and I've been unemployed for a couple of months. She goes, oh, my gosh, we're looking for somebody just like you. And so generally, these things have a way of working out once you get somebody to the point of, you know, getting up, getting out, doing just a little bit of networking, and then what happens if they maintain that harmony between their thoughts, feelings, and actions? People just want to help them. That's how people land jobs quickly. The job finding.
There's a couple of questions that's come in that works around this. I'll just kind of put them together, and then you can answer them however you want. One of them is from Ford in Pennsylvania, and I don't know if that's girl or boy, but or man or woman. What should a good resume look like? And then goes on to ask, what should one stress in a job interview? What I want as an employee, or what the employer wants from an employee?
Okay, for Ford, the first one was in regard to, what was the first one again?
What should a good resume look like?
Okay, a good resume should include your name, your contact information, including your email and phone numbers, and include a statement that says, this is what you're looking for, this is your objective. And if there's room, you could indicate what you think are your marketable skills. And then in the body, definitely tell them where you worked previously in any education. That's the basics, and I think that's what a good resume should include. Now, when I was in employment, I never put a lot of emphasis in cover memos, but apparently people are looking more to those being customized to the employer, so I think that's a good idea. And a trick I learned from somebody is if they download the job description from Monster, to shrink it down to about a size 1 font and print it on your resume in white coloring so you don't see it, but it includes all the keywords. I think that's a guerrilla marketing technique that's kind of cool. Did you understand that one,
Sherry? Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a kind of a cool idea to get your resume to pop up. And then, so that would be to answer Ford's questions. And then the other one is, what should you stress in the interview? I think it's important that in the process of you evaluating them, and if it sounds good and in your heart, gut, you feel very excited about the opportunity, I think before you leave there, what you should say is, I've enjoyed this interview. It seems something that I've been looking for, and I would appreciate your serious consideration. Now, those are the magic words that a lot of people don't use, but when they do use, it's like a cold slap in the face. You remember those people. So those words, again, are, I've really enjoyed this interview. It seems like the right thing for me, and I would appreciate your serious consideration. Now, that doesn't exactly answer the person's question, but I think those are valuable words to use. What I think you should stress is what you have to offer. And I try to get an idea of what they're looking for and try to make yourself attractive to suit their needs. And you do that by highlighting what it is that you bring to the employer that they might be able to utilize.
You know, and one of the things you can do is jump on their website and see what they really do and go armed with some information.
Yes, and I would also try to seek out some employees who currently work there. You know, go to lunch nearby the place. You'll end up running into some people who work there and are going outside the office for lunch. And you say, hey, I'm so-and-so, and I happen to be looking for a job. Do you happen to work there, or do you know anybody that I can talk to? And then when you do those things, there's serendipity sometimes has a way of occurring that leads you to the right people to talk to, or to get a piece of information that distinguishes you from anybody else. So, you know, do your research. If your heart is into working in this particular place, do your research and just lift the gates and let yourself explore. That's why Sherry made a good point of getting in online and going to their website and see if there's anything about day in the life that you can maybe relate to.
You know, and one of the things that I really do not like to see on someone's resume is they've got a new phone number and they'll just scribble it out and write it in ink. You know, I won't hire those people. They don't have any care about how they present themselves and probably not about their job. So So are there other don'ts that you can tell people?
Oh, yes. I think, see now, if you were to be networking out there and you come across somebody who happens to know you and what you look for, they would be telling you, oh my goodness, whatever you do, be sure to make sure your resume looks nice and it's well written and there's nothing scratched on there or whatever. But I think after you've done your research and you've tried to understand what the employer is looking for, I think there are four basic steps. The first step is discovery, and that's when you're a job seeker. And during those things, you have to be prepared, focused, and attractive. In other words, to be prepared, you have to be perceived as ready, willing, and able. Your resume has to demonstrate that. Focused, you have to have a goal and a plan to accomplish it. I mean, I'm not interested in people who don't seem to have a career plan for themselves. And attractive, by that I mean you're eager with intent and purpose. You have, and it's obvious from your resume, you're ready to move. The next step is that first contact, which is generally a phone screen. There the expectations are you have to be genuine, personable, and flexible. And by genuine, I mean you have to be interested in the employer and curious to learn about them. They like to see that you're interested about them. Personable, I mean you have to have personality and the ability to impress them. You know, you can't have a personality that demonstrates that you're trained by Al-Qaeda. You've got to have personality, get along with people. And then the third thing is flexible. You have to be sensitive to what they're looking for and when they want to talk to you. So if they say, can we get you in here Monday for an interview, I would change your schedule and get in there as quickly as I can. So be flexible to their schedule. The third step is that interview step, Sherry, and there are three expectations there. You must be committed, with integrity, and confident. And by committed, I mean you're going to be serious enough to do what it takes to make that job work. With integrity, by that I mean you're responsible and also accountable. In other words, you don't shirk responsibility, you don't deny responsibility, you jump in there and you get it done. You do what you say you're going to do, and then confident. You're humble, but you also say, I would appreciate your serious consideration. And then finally, the decision stage where you're made an offer. There are three expectations there. Now, you're going to be selective, decisive, and grateful. And by selective, I mean you have other options. You didn't just put all your eggs in that one employer's basket. They like to know that you're out there and you have other options, which makes you attractive. So do your homework. Be very diligent to ensure that you're getting into the right place for the right reasons. Decisive, after they make you an offer, then be return that favor by being timely with your decision. And if you're going to accept it, accept it. If you're not going to accept it, then reject it and move on. And then lastly, grateful. By that I mean show your appreciation for them interviewing you. Show your appreciation for the offer. Now, all of these things are cumulative. So the first thing I mentioned is equally important to the last one because it's cumulative. So you got to keep these things going, all of these expectations and the etiquette.
Here we believe, and I practice participatory management, so I'm always looking for the best fit for the job and the duties. So in the interviews we conduct, there's two questions we ask, and it always throws people. One of them is, what kind of job are you really looking for? They just look at you dumbfounded. And the other is, what pay range are you looking for? And they don't come prepared to answer really important questions like that.
Yeah. Well, some interviewees consider those to be trick questions. Like, well, I applied for this job that I'm interviewing for. What else would I be looking for? And so when you get that look, like, what are you asking me? One other question might be, what is it about this job and us as an employer that was most attractive to you? And I think that would come across better to them. And as far as money goes, you might say something like, what are your expectations as far as pay in this job? Or it's easier if you just say, what were you making previously? Because they feel it's a setup question, like you're going to, you'll maybe pay them less than what they could get. And the issues around pay are always difficult. So if you just say, what were you making previously? What would you like to get in this job? And I'm not sure if we can meet your expectations, but we'll do what we can. What range are you looking for? Speak in terms of ranges, and I think it eases the awkwardness.
Well, some people just out lie to you. You know, when you go to check their references and their other jobs, they've totally lied to you about what they made. You know, and that's a big turnoff for me anyway.
Well, in which case you should let them know that you don't want anybody that's going to misrepresent themselves. Two of the biggest problems involved in employment involve what they call inflation and projection. Inflation involves puffery, or trying to make yourself look better than you actually are. I think it's very important to be just very honest. Sell yourself, but at the same time be very honest. And I think employers find that honesty refreshing, and they're inclined to go to somebody by making an offer to somebody that they can trust to be honest. And projection is another issue. Projection is even more dangerous because you don't know what's happening. That's when a candidate, an interviewee, projects onto the employer qualities that they don't actually possess. And after you take the job, you complain, well, this isn't what I thought it was. It's just like I took a job once when I was in graduate school at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque, and I went in there to see if it was a headhunter firm, and I went in there to apply for a job, and maybe they could get me a job. And when I was there, I saw this beautiful woman there. Her name is Susie. She was just gorgeous. And the guy said, well, I don't know if I can find you a job, but we can get you a job here. And I said, great. And I took that job because I projected onto Susie, you know, qualifications that I thought she had that she really didn't have. And once we started dating, I wanted out of that place. So I took the job for the wrong reason, and I projected onto Susie qualifications she didn't have. So we have to be very careful not to project onto employers qualities that they don't actually have. And we do that in the excitement of, yeah, this is it. And then we talk ourselves into it, and we later find out, whoops, I made a mistake.
Is there questions that you should not ask an employer, a potential employer?
I think be responsible, be an adult, be sensitive to, you know, you don't want to be asked questions that the employer shouldn't be asking, and I'm sure there's questions that you shouldn't ask them, but actually, you know, anything is almost fair game. You need to say, what are your goals? What are your plans for this company? How is your financial viability? Do you have any layoffs anticipated? I think those are fair questions to ask. I think if they really like you, they're going to answer every question you have. They'll even make it possible for you to talk to somebody who might be your coworker or your future or somebody that you might be working with. In fact, they should be encouraging you to talk to those people. There should be nothing that's hidden.
You know, I've had people come in and say, one of their first questions is, how much time off do I get? Or when am I going to get my first raise? You know, and here we can't have people here who are just doing it for the money, because it's a labor of love. So looking for the right people with the right motives is really incredibly important to me. We have another question here.
Okay.
Which kind of goes along with what we're talking about. Can someone be too close to their coworkers, friendships, etc.? Sometimes I think we get too close. It affects me when others are having a bad day. And that's from Lorraine in Mason, Ohio.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, Lorraine, in that it brings up some real issues. You know, there's the private you, and then there's the public you that you take to work. And there are times when you want to remain private, and there are times when other people want to remain private. And I think you have to work out those details with people, and they're not always easy. And the way I explain it to people is that we have three needs. We have three basic needs, and I hope this helps, Moraine. Our first need is to be included, and our second need is to be controlled, and the third need is for affection. Now, if we're working with people who have high needs to be included, then we need to involve them, invite them, involve them, and involve them. But if somebody has low needs, we need to learn how to give them space, allow them privacy, and don't pressure them. So you need to know yourself, and you need to know others, and you need to help other people know you. And when it comes to control, there are times when you want to be the leader and other times when you want to be the follower. So it's important to know when to give in and cooperate, comply with people who have high control needs. And then there are times when people have low control needs to jump in and volunteer or jump in and initiate and take command of situations. And then for affection, we have low needs and high needs. If you have high needs for affection, that's when we know to show people kindness, friendship, and concern. And if you have a low need for affection, that's when we need to stay focused on our job and not get too mushy, stay professional and serious. So if we know about ourselves when we like to be included and to control and have affection or show affection, that helps. So yeah, you can get too close. That's okay if you can set boundaries around yourself and just let people, here's how you can get along best with me. That helps us along in our ability to have contempt on the job. I hope that helps, Maureen.
Well, here's one just for me. In our company, we have an exercise room that we allow people to go through to try to think. And the employees, on their own, have turned that into problem-solving sessions. They're such a dedicated group. They're dedicated to each other, and they're dedicated to the job here. And so this is a public statement that what Jeff is talking about, job contentment, I'm certainly happy that it goes on here, and I love the staff here. But somebody just sent in, isn't exercise meetings a great idea? And it wasn't signed, so I know it's somebody from my staff. Because, I mean, what other company has that?
I'm not sure that a lot of people have that. When I worked at Miller Brewing, we had a sort of a relaxation room where people could grab a free beer and play some pool and kind of debrief and decompress. I really think whoever sent this is really cool, and they're raising, I think, a really cool idea that you're doing. And I would encourage your employees, if this is how they find strength to deal with issues, my land, what a wonderful thing that they've evolved this. It should be encouraged and appreciated and applauded.
They're just a great group. Let's look at the other side of this. Maybe we only have about 3 minutes left, so I'd like you to answer this question maybe shortly. And in terms of how you coach people, we've talked about job contentment. How does somebody, what makes discontentment? Why does job discontentment exist, and what do you do about it? An answer to what's in your book and an answer to your personal coaching.
Right. If you have, I need to distinguish here between job satisfaction and contentment. If you say, I have job satisfaction, that means your employer is fulfilling your expectations. If you say, I have job dissatisfaction, it means your employer has not fulfilled your expectations. If you say, I have career contentment, it means you feel you're on track to fulfill your calling and purpose. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have job satisfaction or not. And if you say, I have career discontentment, it means you're in the wrong job. That means you need to make some moves to get out of there. So if people are dealing with basic old plain job satisfaction, they have to realize there is no job, career, or employer on earth that is absolutely perfect and consistently satisfying. And if there is, it's human nature to find a reason to complain. So I think we have to understand that nothing is absolutely perfect or nothing is completely satisfying. And it's a matter of reasoning to recognize the agreeable or acceptable middle ground. They may not be this, but at least you have that. They may not do this, but at least they do that. And focus, if you're in the right job and you want to keep that job, focus on learning how to reason and recognize the acceptable middle ground.
And Jeff, how can they get in touch with you?
www.careercontentment-thebook.com. We've got some fantastic webinars coming up. This June 25th is our first one, and we have five series of webinars that are just fantastic for people.
This is from a review on Amazon. Jeff Garton is hugely experienced and has thought deeply about the problems faced by employers and employees alike. But it is not just a book about business. It's also a book about gaining a new set of attitudes and skills that can radically change the way in which you see and conduct yourself. The book is, must be a typo. The book is road and deep and also rich textured. It is full of practical advice and precise programs that can change the face of the world we know. The book Career Contentment, Don't Settle for Anything Else, 296 pages, 5 stars from Amazon, $15.61. Go get it. Sounds great. Jeff, you sound great, and I certainly would get in touch with you if I needed a job.
Sherry, thank you so much. I've enjoyed your program, and I like your music today.
Thank you. We'll be back with you next Sunday. Please join us, and thank you for listening.
Bless my soul, you load 16 tons. What are you getting? Yeah, another day, old man, deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Thank you.